Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. How are you all? How's it going? It's the middle of the week. You know that means it's Wednesday, hump day, as they say. Today, I've got a special guest. Now, you may not know who he is. He goes by Malcolm Flex, or his new Twitter handle, Return of the Flex, because he recently got booted off of Twitter and has made his triumphant return. And, you know, I've actually been trying to get him on my show for quite some time because I always tend to appreciate his takes on things. And it is a pleasure to bring on Malcolm Flex. Welcome to the show, Malcolm. How are you doing?
Oh, how's it going? How's it going? Sorry, I didn't know I was a person after I got depersoned by Lord Dorsey. So, you know, being back online is a very, very surprising development for me.
Yeah. Well. How was that? You were in Twitter jail, or is that count still in Twitter jail? I mean, I don't even know. Are you breaking rules? I'm not sure. Am I like blowing up your spot right now?
You may be. I was in the gulag.
Ooh. Definitely. The cyber gulag. I hear it's paradise, though.
It is. They give us one meme a day, and we live off of that. We subsist off of a single meme.
That's all you get. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's a good one. Hopefully it's one that you haven't seen yet. So let's talk about you. A lot of people might not know who you are. I've been following you for quite some time. I know you're in the medical field, and let's start there. What is your main profession?
All right. Well, classically, I think people would probably say that I fall under the broad umbrella, first off.
Oh.
That is scientist.
Oh, goodness sakes. That means nothing.
I know, since everybody's a scientist these days, but no, I'm just a researcher. So okay. I actually specialize in clinical research, which means that we typically work with patient pools, and we actually collaborate with a lot of hospitals or a specific hospital where we're centered out, and we draw patient pools using MDs at that facility to basically loan. They act as the PIs or the primary investigators for their studies, and they allow us to conduct the research, you know, call up their patients, have actual research visits, and, you know, certain research protocol with them. So it's a nice little robust field, but there's a lot of divergences and things where, again, if you're not careful, people will get the wrong idea about you. Yeah, you know, I actually make a joke. I've actually made plenty of jokes that people think that I'm always in the lab 24/7 sitting up here doing, you know, working with all these different Eppendorf pipettes and, you know, creating essays and stuff like that, you know. But no, most of it, especially with how research is these days, has been gone dry. So it's a lot of surveys, a lot of data collection, a lot of sorting out, parsing data, maybe some statistics, but there is still some lab work. But, you know, research ain't like what they show in the movies where, you know, you got the evil guys in lab coats.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to ask the first thing that pops in my head, though, because I've read different medical studies and so many medical studies, my goodness, I am so over it, and they're difficult to read sometimes, but I've also found a lot of them many times contradict each other, right? So I'll read one study and then I'll read another study that basically says the opposite of the other thing. So you say you work with hospitals. How do you know that the information that you're getting is accurate and not you know, fudge to prove a narrative that then you're getting specific ones, you know? Like, how do you know that it's raw data? I mean, it's your industry, so, you know, I'm sure you have some knowledge of that.
Unfortunately, that's all up to human error typically, you know. Normally when a CRO or a contract research organization basically reaches out to you and wants to use your site to conduct research, there'll be moments where, again, you can either hire a team that's specifically tailored to that staff, or if you have people on there who have interest in the studies that you're running, you can basically bring them, you know, you can basically say, hey, do you want to do this study? If they accept, then they basically learn the protocol. And then next thing you know, once they've gone through all the requisite trainings, they've basically cleared things up with, you know, your clinical research associates, which honestly, those guys, they're overpaid, but man, they have a sweet gig.
Yeah.
But, you know, once you go, you know, you clear things up with the clinical research associates, they make sure that you're in the green.
Yeah.
It's basically on them to conduct research, make sure that they're entering the data properly, make sure that there's integrity, in that when they're admitting patients to studies, that they don't have any disqualifying factors or, you know, no risk to the patient. Sometimes you have to have your primary investigator sign off on specific people because they might not be in the ideal patient population. And so you really don't know what you're getting, which is why you get so much variance. And that's the only front end on the data collection and then entering it into EDC or electronic data capture.
Yeah.
That's just the first part. Then you have to have the back end review, and you know, there's a lot of the publishing of the information that's left up to the sponsor or client that we're conducting research for normally. So again, you don't know what they're going to be using your data for. All you know is that you're consenting, you're seeing the patient, you're handling the samples, you know, doing whatever preparation or conducting whatever experiments that the protocol basically, you know, specifies. And then after that, you don't know.
Yeah.
So that's the dirty little secret of the industry. A lot of people don't actually, you know, they don't think that it's that many moving parts or that it's that complex, but yeah, it really is.
I mean, I've felt like it would have been pretty complex, you know, because it takes forever to get going through things going to be approved. I'd say that even that isn't enough sometimes. That's interesting.
A lot of people think it's just put chemical in the beaker or the flask, shake it up,
shake it around. See, it works. Aha, yeah.
I know.
So is there any specific branch of the medical world that you're more focused on? You know, like virology or I don't know, anything, you know, what is it? Are you just kind of like, I'm just the research guy, like you want me to research, I'll go over the numbers, you give me the different people and, you know, do exactly as you just explained, you know, or is it kind of like more specific on something that you're researching?
Well, I'm actually a generalist, and I think that's actually the appeal. But I'll say, though, that there is a common theme in a lot of my studies, that, you know, barring the one study that I'm contractually unable to talk about, there is, you know, precision medicine has ended up becoming kind of a niche for me.
Yeah,
it's basically just the process of customizing your medical approach to a patient's individual genetics or just, you know, their whole genome. So there's a very big area of growth there. And that's actually where I center around, you know, I happen upon it. And, you know, a lot of people don't like to do those studies just because there's just so much that you have to learn on the front end with the protocols. And it's an area, it's kind of an area where you're siloed in. So
it almost feels it feels like that's kind of where we're moving. I mean, are you seeing that a lot, that we're really starting to make specific medicines per the person that's I mean, it's so hard to not instantly have a question that would get me banned. Because I there's something I want to ask.
I know what you want to ask.
You know what I mean? And it's like we have to have specific medicines for each individual body, because we are very drastically different. Not one thing could work for everyone.
We're basically
I'll leave it at that, right? I guess I can't really get too much into details, but so that's awesome. So you're you're very knowledgeable about the industry, and that's why that's why it's very entertaining. If you guys don't know, this guy is a professional dunker. He absolutely shreds people apart very openly, very brazenly, and it's almost like a sport to you on Twitter. It's very fun to follow him. I actually posted it in the link below. There is in the description, it's a link to his new Twitter, or his current Twitter page. I'll just say that, and so you can watch him go to work. It's almost like a side job to this guy, it seems. And you know, you've been very vocal about it, and Twitter banned you, right? So why did they ban you? Because from what I've seen, you call a lot of people out, but it's with logic, and I rather enjoy that part of it, because you're rather spicy sometimes, but you use the logic like a freaking baseball bat. So what happened? What was the tipping point?
I think the tipping point was kind of in my last couple of days. Again, my approach really went from a scalpel to, like you just said, a baseball bat.
Okay.
I really started using some of the insults like cudgels only because there's so much intellectual disingenuousness or disingenuity when it comes to discourse online and on Twitter. And at some point, you get a little bit jaded. You know,
yeah.
You get to the point where you're just like, you know what, man? I really don't want to talk to this person, but for some odd reason, they're under my tweet where I said nothing about them, made no specific reference, as if I summoned them to give their opinion. So yep. You know, my friend Ron Coleman, he's pretty spicy on the back end of a lot of things. He actually told me on his podcast when I was there after I had first, you know, disappeared. He said, you know, man, like some of those guys that, you know, are in our little group, man, you know, we saw you getting real greasy. And I was like, what, me?
Really? Me? What?
No, couldn't be.
Yeah, right.
I owned up. I'm a man of, you know, I am a man of many things, but, you know, I will always be at the very least intellectually honest. And so I owned up to it. I said, good. You know what, you're pretty much right. I started turning up the savage a little bit too much. It is addicting, you know. It's like, especially when you do, you know, when you counter ratio where people think they're coming on, they're going to make you, you know, suddenly apologize or put your account on private or be like, oh my god, I can't do it, all the mean twits and stuff. And you know, it's just like, bruh, like y'all don't realize y'all are giving me entertainment. This is perfect. So
I can see that.
Yeah, so well, I actually
on the subject of discourse, because there's a lot of times where you'll almost go out of your way to try to give people an olive branch. You know, it's you'll start with that, like, well, this is why you're wrong. I'm just letting you know. I was listening to what's Matthew McConaughey on NPR today. He was doing a Spaces, this new Spaces thing. They brought it back.
Oh yeah,
and he was saying about how discourse has been changed and people are not having conversations. They're just trying to convince the other side why they're wrong. And that's an issue, because we have to learn how to have conversations where we can validate the other side. Like, look, I understand your side of things. I want to help you understand my side of things. People are now just trying to tell others why they're wrong. And that's it. That's the only thing. You're just wrong. You're in and that's what those people are trying to do. They just get on your page. They don't want to hear back from you. No. They don't care about that. They just want to tell you're wrong. And as soon as you counter them, you're like, oh, you think I'm wrong. Cracks knuckles, you know, and you go to work. And you take a step back, and that's happening on so many different levels in everything, in politics and school boards. And I mean, everything. I mean, everyone. There's no more civil discourse anymore. It's such a shame.
That is 110% it, man. It's become you know, part of it, I think, is the proliferation of social media. You know, we've gotten to the point where, again, people are so, and I want to phrase this tactfully, but they're so socially inept.
Yep.
The art of persuasion has died. It's taken a nosedive. It's dead. You know, throwing the towel, barrier. People don't understand how to persuade people. There are a select few people that still do. A lot of those people become politicians, and you know, they do nothing except for dupe people out of tax money. Thanks for that bridge nowhere, people, and thanks for all this infrastructure. But again, that's the problem. Infrastructure. Everything is infrastructure now. This oxygen, you know? Infrastructure, man. Smell that infrastructure.
Don't even get me started on that freaking infrastructure BS, dude. It's so stupid. No.
Dude, people are ruined, though, and that's part of the issue, is that nobody has any, you know, I think it's the EQ, you know, emotional quotient. You know how people always say, you know, I've got big brain, 140 IQ. You know, a lot of people don't have very good EQ. They don't understand empathy, how to empathize, how to, you know, basically be sociable and receive a message and then take that message and create some kind of permutation that will be receivable by the other person and give it to them.
Exactly.
People don't understand how to do that anymore. Nowadays, it's, I've gotten this doctrine from this person, this expert. I'm going to bang yourself over the head. I'm going to bang you over the head with that, like a cudgel. Mm-hmm. And then eventually they just do it until somebody says, okay, you know what? I'm done with this. You're not listening. Bye-bye. okay, well, you should have did that about 5 or 6 weeks ago, but, you know, never mind.
Right.
You know, here we are. And so that's where we're at. So this course is dead. And
yeah, it is.
It's unfortunate, but we can either mourn it or we can adapt. So by dunking on people, I'm basically adapting, because if you're going to say something stupid, you ought to get told how stupid what you said sounds.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, make bullying great again.
Well, yeah, it is, essentially, that could be an answer. And that's kind of what I wanted to go into. Like, how do we inject emotional intelligence back into society? Like, how do we bring that to the forefront? Because I feel like if more people had empathy, things would make more sense, or not make more sense, but those people that don't care about anyone else, like, oh, if you don't believe what I believe, then you're a Nazi. You know, they go to that extreme. If they had just a little bit of empathy, they would understand, or at least see a little bit, and maybe finally realize that this utopian world that they all imagine, that everyone will all get along, everyone will agree on every single thing. It's never going to happen. It's an impossibility. No one will ever agree with everyone else. That's just not how humans are, right? Mm-hmm. We're so drastically different. We were talking about it a little bit before the show started. It's just like there's 7 billion, almost 8 billion people on this planet. It's crazy.
Right. And everybody has just some different form of, you know, pathology. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some way that they receive a message. So you can say, hey, how's it going? Okay, you're going to get a number of good answers. A lot of them are going to be, oh, doing fine. But then you're going to have people that are going to say, oh, well, you know, my day's bad. I stubbed my toe on the way out the door. You know, I stepped in a puddle of water. Now I got wet socks. I'm like, one word can be received a number of different ways. And true. So the issue with that is, again, you know, we've got to be able to custom tailor our approach. Like, there's no ideal way for us to create a society that people are all going to get along in, and that we're all just going to suddenly be feeling just, you know, happy. Yep. In this one utopia. But it starts with dads raising their kids. That's the first thing, because I'm noticing in our increasingly matrilineal society. And I don't want to get into the whole absent father thing, because again, that's been beaten to high hell, especially with the Black community. You know, there are actually a lot more fathers present in the Black community than we think. But the issue is, you have a lot of present absentee fathers.
Yeah.
People that are in the house, but they're too busy on their phones and
or playing games or anything. You know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think it's in that community alone. I think that phrase, you know, absent fathers, like, It's not even a race thing, because I think that that's just prevalent across society in general. This whole, I mean, how many, you know, I was on Tinder back in the, I mean, I'm married now, but you know, I've been on there and years ago, and I just was like, whatever, seeing what it was like. And there were so many women with kids, you know. It's not, I have cousins that are, oh, I'm dating this girl who's got a couple kids, like whatever. It's like a normal thing now to just have kids. So it's normal to have kids without a husband. And it's also normal to just get abortions. Like, I mean, that's a whole nother subject. I'm not trying to like really bring that up, but
don't ban us, bro. But
right.
No,
it's normalized, both sides of those things.
Mm-hmm. And that's a problem. That's where we're at. And, you know, it's weird because, again, there's not even a comfortable way to broach that conversation. Like, you can't go up to a kid and say, hey, who made you? You know, or you cannot ask the woman, you know, hey, you know, who'd you allow to redecorate your internal and walls?
Right.
I'm trying very hard to not be vulgar with this. But, you know, it's like, who did you let, you know, basically run off on you on the first night? That's what we really need to figure out. But then, you know, that gets into a whole nother layer, rampant sexuality. Think about it. You just said you were on Tinder. What did we use Tinder for, guys?
I hated it too. I actually went on, I think, 2 dates total, and they were terrible. I instantly regretted it. I met my wife in real life. We met in a beautiful in interaction. The sparks flew. I was blinded, right? She's now my wife. Like every other girl just disappeared because it was a moment that I will never forget for the rest of my life. That day is burnt into my memory, you know? And like, you can't get that with Tinder. It's like,
it's too formulaic.
I don't know. Yeah. It's weird. I'm very much against, that whole thing. Cause you don't get the vibes from people, right? There's this energy that human beings have when you're around someone else. You'll never, ever get that from a picture.
Even worse, it's like a routine. It's like a routine. Like there's this unspoken routine that you have to go on Tinder where first off, you know, when you swipe on somebody and you match, you know, first y'all are going to share a couple of barbs, you know, they're going to make a couple of remarks about your person, you know, first off you share a couple of barbs, then next thing you know, you got to make her laugh. Or if you make her laugh on the first one, okay, well now we got to have a follow-up to the conversation. We got to keep it interesting. And after that, you know, you maybe share a few vague platitudes about your life. You know, you try to come off as mysterious but successful as possible, yada, yada.
Right. After
that, you assume that she's not over here texting Mr. Chad Thunder something that I can't say. And that, you know, you've got a chance to shoot your shot for the number. And it's like, that's such a soulless, formulaic process that you never get to know anybody, but they do get to know this idealized version of you where that luster eventually wears off. And what do you think happens when you lose that luster?
Yeah, they move on. They go to the next one. It's like,
and you pray that they use protection before they moved on, because otherwise, here you go.
Well, that whole thing too. I mean, people are not using protection and they don't care anymore because there is no accountability. I feel like we're shooting at like multiple different targets right now. But I mean, all this kind of stuff needs to be talked about. You know, I hear you got kids in the background. It's like, you know, that's really cute. I mean, I'm looking forward to being a dad. No joke. Like I can't wait. I'm actually in my dad's house, and I have spent a lot of time over the past couple weeks hanging out with my dad, and I don't live around here anymore. So I cherish these moments, and I learned a lot from him. And we talk about fathers being in the household. I don't know what I would do if I didn't have, if my dad didn't change his whole life for me. And he really did. And that's that's a good father. But you know, that's it. Like he really, I'm looking back at what he did. I'm like, wow, like that. I learned a lot from him, and I can't wait to change my life for my kids. Right. And
that's amazing.
But how do we instill that? How do we bring that back to that responsibility, that, how good that feels? I don't know what it feels like yet. You do. Yeah,
I think we're finally, you know, sort of taking the steps. A lot of, you know, you see all the information about what people are doing when they're going to the school boards now. So much so that, you know,
those domestic terrorists.
I know.
Oh, can you believe that?
Excuse me. I don't like you teaching my son. Hey, FBI, open up. You know, it's like, what are we doing? But that's the step that needs to be taken, is because people are so disconnected from what their kids are doing.
Right.
You know, they just give their kids smartphones and give them tablets, and then just let them go off and roam the uncensored internet and probably end up on TikTok. And then next thing you know, they're sitting up here absorbing all of these negative social mores and these bad ideas.
Yep.
And then
China controls and
China
is manipulating the algorithms. Please continue though.
But yeah, it's like, oh, and don't even get me started on algorithm manipulation. You know, we've got a whole generation of kids that have grown up nurtured by an algorithm. Think about that.
That's true. It's scary, actually, like, when you put it that way.
And so what we're looking at right now is that we're in a situation where, you know, your kids, a few years down the line, they've consumed so much of this trash media, followed so many of these trends, and it's and you know, again, their neuropsychology, it's still developing so much.
True.
And then by the time they're 16, 17, and you know, you're finally trying to have a conversation with them as an adult almost, or you know, they're this person that's just reprehensible to you. You can't stand them. You're like, okay, just go off to college. You know, I'm done. I don't want to be around them. And that's what we end up getting. And then these
and that's kids, what they want also.
Mm-hmm. And they grow up with resentment, though, against their parents. That's another thing that we don't talk about. And guess what? If they haven't been properly parented, I've learned this. My mom's always told me this, and she still tells me this while I'm raising my kids. Kids crave structure. You know, subconsciously, they really do. They want to know. You know, they want to be disciplined in a way that just lets them know that you care. And when you don't do it and they grow up, who do you think they're going to get to do it?
Govern me harder, daddy.
Oh, my God. Tax me harder, grandpa. But no, that's literally where we're at.
I know. It's crazy. I mean, they're advocating for more government. When the freaking attorney general said to the FBI, if parents oppose critical race theory, they are domestic terrorists. That I feel like if there is a line in the sand, that was it. And they stepped past it. I mean, seriously, Martin Luther King would be turning in his grave if they found out that they're teaching that you have a different color skin than I do. Therefore, you should be treated differently. Oh, my goodness. Sorry.
I know. I'm shocked. I'm shocked it came back because I didn't vote for Joe. So I didn't know when that was going to wear off. But
Did you wake up one day and you were a different color?
I woke up. My credit score was good. I had a good car. You know, the roads in my neighborhood weren't cracked up. And God dang it. Not voting for Joe was the best thing I ever did. Okay. Back, you know, again, before I get too rescared with my commentary, it's like the situation that we're dealing with, you know, especially with individuals of my skin color that push these sort of narratives that talk about like racial division and, you know, the Ibram X. Kennedy stuff where we need new discrimination. A lot of these people, we like to call them, especially in certain circles, new blacks. And what a new black is a person that's grew up in a coddled environment. So they're the suburban middle class type black kids.
Okay.
They have never actually had a real black experience. They didn't go to a majority black school. They didn't really understand what it was like to grow up in a neighborhood around black people. So then they go off and they get into college and they get taught this stuff that tells them like, hey, you know, you're great for being black. And then they start integrating in all these racial identity groups and these groups where, you know, you just and where they make you feel like I'm black and I'm proud and all this, which that's not really indicative of the real black experience. But then they take it to the next level.
Yeah.
They start projecting and, you know, reading all of these books written by these think pieces.
White liberal people.
Equity. Yes. Yes. There you go. So again, they get to that point and then it's like, now they're on Twitter talking greasy. You know, it's like the real black people that live in black neighborhoods still, they're like, we don't rip with any of this. Again, black people are really, really conservative deep down. Like these liberal blacks that you see, it's so weird to see them because, again, if you were with them in person, which that goes back to what we were talking about, their energy is off. They don't move like we do. You know, they can't speak the lingo. You know, it's like if you were to talk to them, they would sound very forced. They would sound robotic. It would be scripted. They don't understand the history. Like you said, Martin Luther King would be rolling in his grave. And we're about to go back to segregation days. Because again, you know, it's like black people understand what it's like when you got to drive to the rich, the white part of town, just to go shopping at the Publix or the Kroger. I guess back in the day, it was the Food Mart where you got to drive to the nice part of town to do that. Because again, your neighborhood is separate from their neighborhood and there's an income disparity. Because again, you can't get good businesses because it's just not profitable. So black people, we don't want that. We want a society where, again, we can just patronize anybody that we want to. You know, if I want to go to a white business, I should be able to go to a white business. I shouldn't have to go to this white racial block of this area. And then now I'm looking like the one chocolate chip on a sugar cookie, and I'm confused. Like that's weird. But that's what these people that have never been in that situation believe. That's what they think that black people want.
Yeah,
that's why we call them new blacks. Again,
I've never even heard that term before.
Oh, you got to visit Black Twitter, man. Black Twitter is awesome. That's like the best part of Twitter.
Is it?
So, mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, meritocracy, right? That's how I like to think. You know, I want the best person for the job to be in that job, right? That's how it should be. Like the best supermarket, the best deli. You know, I lived in Brooklyn. I would travel for blocks and blocks. I would skip like 7 delis to go to the one deli that I knew made the best sandwiches. You know what I mean? Meritocracy rules. That's how it should be. And now they're pushing like, oh, well, you should, and it's everywhere. It's in the construction industry. It's in all these different industries throughout America right now. It's just this push for, well, we should have a POC-owned, minority-owned, right, blah, 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 blah. Even though it might suck, we're actually worsening. If it happens to be that company and they get it because they're the best for the job, awesome. All right.
Yeah.
Sure, diversity should exist, but also we shouldn't throw meritocracy to the side. We shouldn't let that go. Right. Like, that is the dumbing down of America. Mm-hmm. We're losing our strength by doing that. And they're trying. Right. That's equity.
That goes back to parenting.
Good point.
You learn strength from your father. You know, most of the times, if you only had a mother in your life, you've learned comfort. You learned love and care. But mm-hmm. it's a different kind of love than the love that you're going to get from the world. And a lot of these people haven't been, you know, they haven't been fathered properly.
Right.
You know, I'll put it like this, and this may be controversial, but, you know, it's like until you've had your butt whooped by a belt and then sat down in your room for a bit, and then your dad walks in and you're like, son, I didn't want to whoop you, but you got to understand, if I don't parent you, if I don't discipline you here, the world's going to discipline you out there, and there ain't no redos, there's no second chances, there's no other tries. Until you've had that, you've understood the harshness of the world from your dad, and you've understood that's a different type of love.
Yeah.
You think that everything in the world should be soft. This should be candy cane, sunshine, and rainbows, and that's just going to lead you to create or try to create a utopia. And those people that would sell you that dream, those are those charismatic individuals with the EQ that understand that y'all over here looking like licks, you know, so we gonna go ahead and I'm gonna sell you this. Meanwhile, I'm gonna be making money for my contractor buddies on the back end, or I'm gonna be gaining power and I'm gonna be buffing up my stock portfolio. Hi there, Pelosi. How's it going?
Yeah.
So that's exactly what we're dealing with.
See, now there's gonna be a huge portion of people out there that'll hear what you just said, and you're now a bigot. You know, how dare you say that a single mother can't be a father to their child? I can't even say it with a straight face, but that's what they're thinking. You know, it's like these women are being told to be men, like, you know, that these figures in movies and this whole movement to like make these strong masculine men. Like, that's not what a woman is. I mean, it's not. That's the man's place.
A man
versus the woman's is what
I was about to say. Getting a woman is trying to be a man is basically you're getting a second-rate man and a terrible woman all in one. So, you know,
yeah, because like, you can't do one. Do the one that you know, and then mm-hmm. you know, and maintain. Humans have been around for those who don't know, a long time, thousands of years. Thousands mm-hmm. of years, right? And, you know, we should, I don't know, maybe stick to some traditions that work.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? this actually, all right, I'm going to bring this up because normally when I do an interview, we just kind of rant, and this is, I'm having a lot of fun. But this is so perfect and on point to our conversation. I can't believe how naturally we just got to this point. I am going to talk about the new Playboy cover. All right. I don't know how many people have seen this. Now, I asked you, you actually haven't seen this cover. So the new Playboy cover.
I've been six.
Oh, my.
You're laughing. I'm not happy about that laugh.
Okay. So I'm just going to show you the title first. Playboy releases October cover featuring a man. That's right. Featuring a man. All right. So now I'm going to be going over to the actual, this is the cover, all right? Bam, there we go. This is the new cover of Playboy.
Come on. In the stream, we're done here. That's it. Throw the population in the trash bin, bro.
All right. All right. Sorry, everyone's eyeballs. I'm going to get rid of this. Hold on. Let me
think. It's a Playboy, right, though. That is a Playboy, if we're being honest.
Yeah, but.
That is a honest marketing.
Okay. In the traditional sense of the word, what a Playboy is, maybe, yes. But this is Playboy magazine. It's for men. Mm-hmm. Who like to look at nude women, right? Nude women. I mean, that's tradition. And actually, I have a bunch of vintage Playboys that someone gave me that are from the 60s and 70s. It's pretty cool. They actually have a bunch of cool articles, and it's like an actual men's magazine with a bunch of naked women also in it. And they've kind of lessened the dumbing down of America, of course. Now it's just nudie mags. I haven't ever bought a Playboy magazine, and this is the state of it now. They're putting men on the cover. It is a man.
Aren't you glad you ain't got to break the addiction or be disappointed? Like, this in the Playboy I grew up with, darn it. Back in my day, we used to whack our jimmies to some good old women. What is that? Okay, all right, guys.
Do you call it a jimmy? What?
Look, man, I'm over here. I'm trying not to get you banned. I'm doing you a favor.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, and after seeing this, I'm bringing it back. I got to bring it back. It's a man. I'm fairly certain he's gay. It's like bare-chested. It's very clearly a man. I don't understand. There's Playgirl magazine. Isn't that where they put men? Wouldn't that make more sense that he's... Or because he likes men, and or is it a, or does he identify as a woman, and that's what they're trying to do? I don't really understand, but of course, CNN had to do an article about it, and just to let you know, this wasn't even the first man on Playboy, and I haven't been paying attention to Playboy much, only those vintage Playboys I thought there was kind of cool, but it turns out they actually had another man on there, and here's their first one.
Yeah,
this is a also a man, very clearly a man. He's
what
got
are we
a,
doing here
a
what,
must,
what are we doing
I breaking barriers. Let's see here, what do they say? He has powers because he thinks differently and has a vision of the future beyond what others see. Oh my goodness!
I really hope he does, because what I see is nothing good, man. Nothing,
it's a man. Good, I don't understand. Like it?
That's
are
a
they?
Man, man.
It's a, that's a man, man. Yeah. They. What are they trying to do? Are they trying to push away their whole base? Like their entire base? Like all of them?
I just had a brain blast here, bro. I just had a brain blast. This is 69B chess. Okay.
Oh.
The creators of Playboy are actually staunch conservatives, and they said, you know what, we're tired of all of these yuppies in this company, so we're gonna kill it. We're gonna kill it. You know, it's like the Ryan Johnson, destroy the, you know, it like destroy it, just get rid of it. So what they're doing is they're going to tank this down, and they're going to turn off everybody, so the stocks go down, and we kill degeneracy altogether. Wanking will be a thing of the past. They're society, they're doing the Lord's work, God dang it, hallelujah. So that's okay. That's
maybe we'll take it one step further. It's actually 80D chess, whatever. One further D. It's
too many D's.
It's feminists that are acting like conservatives to try to bring down Playboy, because secretly they think that's part of the patriarchy, and they want to bring down the patriarchy. And of course, Playboy magazine, it's objectifying women, it's giving men something to spank their jimmies to. I'm sorry, I've never heard that phrase before. Yeah. And it's really funny.
We have too many D's in this Playboy conversation. I am not afraid to tell you this, man. Like, we're getting to layers of strategy at the mind to not go to. But no, that's actually, but think about this though. And I don't want to bear the lead there, because that was so amazing, so stunning and brave of a conversation that we were on.
Yeah. But,
you know, it's so funny, because people will think that the person in their, you know, somebody in their life is playing this intricate, immaculate strategy like that, where there's fake outs, there's feints, there's sudden moves, and they're playing around your plans and stuff. Yet when it comes to the government, people believe that everybody in government only operates on one layer of strategy, or they're just honestly a fault. And I can't figure that out for
a- People really think that? Wait, no way.
81 million people. 81 million people. Most popular in history. Do I have to say?
I'm sorry.
After I lost my blackness.
After the Maricopa County audit, though, this whole every time he's like 81 million people voted for me. He said it yesterday, like it was some sort of
pride too, man. Like
over and over, over and over again. And it's like there was tens of thousands of duplicate ballots. There's ballots missing. I've seen videos of them recounting ballots over and over and over again. Double it's like count. 81 million are. What's going to come out one time? Somehow. Yeah, they reach
number somehow.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll see. It's coming out. I did a segment yesterday talking about how they're pushing for a nationwide audit. I don't know if that's going to happen. We'll see. If it does, if something's going to happen from it, I don't know. You know, who knows?
Yeah. Well, I have an amazing habit of black pilling people. And I will say this. Right now, in order for us to get any of that, we've got so many layers of trash to deal with. First off, we've got a intelligence structure that's mobilized against the people. It's been mobilized. Did you hear about Google now, where they're actually going to be cooperating with the federal government to send information about your search history to the government?
I'm sorry, so now, what now?
Yeah, Google. Yeah, so now not only do you have your NSA agent, you know, your FBI spook that checks in on you at night, now you got some underpaid Google employee. I know Disclosed TV broke it. So, you know, now you've got so many people looking through your stuff, and we have absolutely no privacy. That's just the first layer of things that we have to combat. Then we've got this woke military structure that seems all the happier to crack down on their own civilians and to lock down the nation's capital and turn it into some enemy fortification. Then on top of that,
I gotta bring this up. Government secretly orders Google to track anyone searching certain names, addresses, and phone numbers.
Yahoo News.
Wow.
Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon.
I know, right? That's where we're at. So, I mean, we've got a lot of things to take down, first off, before we can even...
That's a good point.
Well, to defend against, number one. And that's the problem that I find with conservatives in general. Again, I come from a different school of thought. I've actually changed from being anarcho-capitalist to more libertarian to finally more conservative. And, you know, the process that took me there is called growing up a little bit more.
Yeah, but, that's true.
You know, I kind of realized that there's these barriers between, again, when you get into these really specialized ideologies of governance and economics, and it's just, you know, people won't agree enough for you to bring that to fruition. So it's like, get in where you fit in right now. Conservatives, you know, they've got the hot hand. They've got an easy base for us to really work with. So, and they care about liberty, but the issue is that conservatives are overly defensive. Like, when's the last time that you've seen a conservative push a conservative policy to shape or reform the nation?
It's a good point.
Our policies are always diametrically opposed to that of the left. It's always in defense. We're always making the second move. We're never being proactive. And you can say that that's just by nature of the conservative ideology, because again, conservatism, I love adding the extra B, but conservatism is all about keeping in tradition, which is naturally defensive. Yeah. Whereas communism and socialism, all of these leftist ideologies, they're all about changing tradition. So that's naturally aggressive. That's very much encroaching on tradition. So that's really where we're at, is that, again, we're not in a very good position to stop any of this. Like, I just don't know how we do it, because again, it seems like our politicians, you know, they run these amazing robust campaigns, say all this good stuff, go on stage with the guns, walk through the hoods and the ghettos, talking about we're going to bring back the schools, and then they get in Congress, they eat that first steak dinner, and they get the itis for their whole term.
Yeah, they exactly. Fall
asleep. So I'm trying to figure it out. How do we win? And, you know, number one, is there even a win condition?
Good question.
What's the win? We're fighting a 40-year multi-generational strategy that's finally coming to roost.
Yep.
And I tell conservatives this all the time. If you want to win, guess what? It's not going to be a sexy solution. You know what January the 6th was? That was a group of people that got very, very impatient, and they lost their bearing.
I don't agree with that. I think so,
because, again, well, a lot of those efforts, you know, going down to D.C., let's be honest, conservative politicians ain't did jack shit. They're not going to do anything. They're never going to, you know, they were never going to properly contest the most popular president in history. They were never going to do that. That was grandstanding for their own reelections. That effort would have been better served mobilizing in Georgia, getting people signed up so that we could have won that runoff. And we wouldn't be counting on Joe Manchin, who, you know, he could cave any day, and Kyrsten Sinema, who, again, voted for the impeachment. Let's not forget that. We wouldn't be hailing these people as the heroes, keeping us from basically losing the filibuster and ending up in a situation where we're going to lose our nation permanently.
Okay.
If we would have mobilized all that effort where it, you know, through the process, we could have possibly done things. Yeah. That's where I have my gripe. And I told people, like, what's done going to D.C.? Like, at best, you get conservatives in the street, and then you get Antifa coming out here whacking skulls, and they get all kinds of propaganda of conservatives looking weak and scared. But at best, at worst, you get propaganda against conservatives that sits up here and justifies a lot of action to people that already have the mass media apparatus at hand, because, let's be honest, we have fled the institutions.
Yeah,
I don't believe in fleeing the institutions. I don't believe in fleeing the battlefield.
Yeah, we're giving them the win.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. We can't do that. So I think personally that January 6th was a setup to make Trumpers look like terrorists, and they've used it. You know, it's insane, because I talk about this a lot on my show. Like, I was there that day, and I listened to Trump speak, and I went to the Capitol, and I was peacefully protesting in front of the Capitol. I didn't even know that all the stuff went down. I was standing in the street when everyone started talking about someone just got shot inside. You know, like I heard it murmur through the crowd, and people didn't like start freaking out. They didn't like rage. They were like, oh, that's so sad. You know, that we're, that's all they did. You know, it wasn't like a shock. Maybe they should have been more mad, but like, they weren't there raging. They were there trying to gather to have that evidence be seen in Congress that day, which of course they didn't even bring up, which annoys me, because that's what I wanted. I wanted the election stuff that they found to be on the world stage, because it was live. You know, you could watch it, everything live. And if they had all that stuff, that would have made more people doubt the election than they had. Because there's a lot of people that are just like, nope, nothing wrong with the election. Anyone who says otherwise is absolutely crazy. If you want an audit, you're racist and you're anti-democracy. And I'm like, we're not even a democracy. Democracy is mob rule. Like, these people act like that statement, like, this is a danger to our democracy. You're threatening our democracy. Like, stop saying that. We're not. We're a group of states that all are supposed to have equal say in this constitutional republic that we are in. There is democracy is actually a problem with this country right now, because we're turning into it. It is becoming mob rule, and that's not okay. They're talking about disenfranchisement, right? The people who are now getting disenfranchised are the people who live in the smaller states that now have no say. Think about Eastern Oregon, right? Portland makes all the rules for that whole state. It's rather blue when you go to that side of the state, and they hate it. Those people don't have any representation at all. None. Zero. None. What are they supposed to do? Right?
If I go die, then that's literally what they say. I mean,
it's crazy.
It's bad, but that's the situation that we're in. And, you know, again, it sounds good to people who don't have any concept of history.
Right.
That's the problem. And when they're rewriting history, burning books, and they're removing all the monuments to areas where, again, we as a nation went horribly wrong, but we learned and we became better for it. When they're removing all these monuments and things, you're going to get a repeat of that.
Yep.
So again, that's another gripe that I have with removing Civil War icons, because now who's gonna, you know, in a generation or two, who's going to even know about Civil War?
Right.
We're leaving out the history books. But that's a very big issue when it comes to state representation, where the cities were really starting to grow too powerful and, again, enforce their way of life on a lot of southern states whose whole way of life was agriculture.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, we're repeating that. We're repeating that where the blue state metropolis, where a lot of the blue state metropolises are trying to basically govern as if they know what's best for the Rust Belt or for Middle America, you know, for Joe Blow out there with a couple of corn, you know, a couple of grain silos and a cornfield.
Mm-hmm.
Like trying to tell him that you don't need a gun to defend your property. That's X amount of miles away from any sort of life, let alone a police presence.
Right. Exactly.
And again, that's a lesson that we learned from history. We learned not to repeat it. That's where tradition comes into things. But the left, they eschew tradition. They don't want tradition. And therefore, you're never going to learn from those lessons. And guess what? We're getting ready to repeat it.
Yep.
It's right true. Here in that spot. So
you say that you black peel people, and black peel, I don't know why I said it so oddly. So you know, you're black peeling a lot of people out there and dunking on people on Twitter. But you still seem rather I don't know if it's optimistic. You're more of a realist, I feel. But you know, you're not defeated by it. You're not black pilled, it doesn't seem. Yeah, like I don't. So what do we do? You know, that's what I always want to talk about. Like, all right, so sure, now we're in this situation. We're very obviously aware of where we're at. So what are the steps to remove that trash, as you say, these layers of trash to the root of the problem?
I got it. And now, like I said, it's a very unsexy solution. There's nothing good, you know, it's not going to please a lot of people. A lot of people aren't going to be like, egad, let's go do it. We'll have it by the end of the month.
Yeah.
But you have to start becoming involved in your local politics. Do you know who your city council is? Do you know what to deal with your school board? Now, have you started, and do you know who your sheriff is? Like, are you canvassing the neighborhood?
Yes.
Like, we need to really start getting involved in a lot of these local GOPs, and even for some people, these third parties, start getting involved, start showing up to meetings, start figuring out who you like, who's saying what needs to be done, look at their track records. And then you need to get out there and canvass for these people. Organize efforts to actually go sign people up, tell people, hey, did you know that pothole over there? Well, there's this one guy who says, we wasted X amount of money on this stinking metro transport system that nobody uses, and maybe we need to divert or reallocate those funds. If you vote for this guy, I got faith in him. I think he's going to do real well. And you start doing that for all your politicians. Then next thing you know, you're creating a feeder system. Because the problem with the modern GOP is that there is no adequate talent feeder system. You know who most of our politicians end up being? Law students. And people who got internships with a politician because their father owns such and such mega court or business and can really help them out. So again, we have to have a concerted effort. I know a lot of people say, I do that, they do that, yada, yada. But if it's not uniform and on the right, if it's not to the same level that the leftists and push their zealots out here who constantly flag down businesses and institute change, it's not going to help.
Right.
I think Adam Townsend had an amazing quote that, you know, it really resonated with me because it was a gut punch of all gut punches.
Okay.
He said, the left is out here wielding power, implementing policy, changing things, and encroaching their world beyond the rest of life. The right, meanwhile, is over here having a slam poetry contest online and high-fiving each other on the back of the bus to the gulags. Think about that for a second.
Yeah,
like we're acting like we win.
Yeah.
We're acting like we're doing all this great stuff, but we haven't done anything. We're sitting up here gunning for national elections, which are getting a lot more and more locked down. And let's be honest, DeSantis should have shown us that, again, It's about the state level. It's about the gubernatorial races. It's about a lot of these municipalities.
Yes, it is.
Where, like, if you really want to change things, you've got to slowly and surely start conquering a lot of these smaller races. That way you have a very good base of support to draw upon when it comes to getting your national and federal level politicians some kind of, you know, boost, or when it comes to finding that next guy. Like, I put like this. Our candidates right now that we're trying to run, Ron DeSantis, who honestly probably shouldn't leave Florida because we need strong governors, who's going to take his place in Florida, a swing state, mind you.
Right, let's be honest, exactly.
Florida has not always been red. It's a swing state. They've got a lot of momentum, but the culture is not permanently cemented there. So we're either pull one of our good governors, or we're going to run Trump, who's going to be the same age as Biden. And I like Trump. He did a lot of great things. Why did my Alexa turn on? Good God, they're listening. But he did a lot of great things.
Yeah.
And let's be honest. If he ran again, I have confidence that he probably could do a good job if he learned from his mistakes that he made in not firing people and being too restrained and, you know,
and trusting the wrong people as well.
Trusting the same swamp that you set out to drain, my guy.
Right. Like, come on, man.
You know, if those are the only choices that we have, we don't have a field to pull in. Like, if you're going to tell me that the next primary, you're going to run Ted Cruz, you know, Rand Paul. I like Dr. Rand Paul, but
I like Rand Paul. Yeah.
But again, he bakes his bread in the Senate. That's what he does best. I don't know that he has a disposition or temperament for the national. And so that's the situation that we're really dealing with, is like, we have no sort of feeder system. There's no dark horse candidate that's going to come out unless you're going to tell me Josh Hawley or somebody like that. We don't have a dark horse. Meanwhile, the left, they're over there, you know, they're prepping their dark horses. They've got several young and up and coming politicians who are out here on Twitch and streaming. Maybe we can run Joe Kent. Joe Kent is a really good guy, but again, he's getting into politics.
Right.
And there's a process there to, you know, build up some trust with independence. But that's, you know, you see what I'm getting at.
We're trying to go for the final boss.
Yeah, we ain't even completed the tutorial level. We're over here trying to fight the final boss as if we're sitting up here geared up and we got everything and we done prepped and, you know, we're ready. We haven't done anything.
Yep.
And I mean, part of that's just because, again, we've just been living our lives. You know, that's what conservatives do. They live their life. Leave me alone. I leave you alone. Tradition. Keep everything as is. Let's raise some kids that go out here and, you know, raise their own kids. But that's what got us in the situation.
Yep.
So
exactly. That's amazing. That's the answer. That's the answer. I love it. Get in and start creating that solid base. Because right now we have no solid base. It's gone.
None. We're trying to build a house. We're trying to build a house on a crawl space that doesn't exist, and we ain't even lay a slab. Like, we're too lazy to even lay a sink. You know, that's blue collar talk for those of y'all that are y'all ain't got calluses on your hands. No.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm joking. I'm pretty sure you got a pretty great audience, man. I think
my chat, my audience is amazing. Everyone who shows up for my show is just incredible. My chat is fantastic.
But smashing that like button, I want to outpace any and everybody else, man.
Smash the like button. Smash a like. Come on, everybody. All right, let's. Mm-hmm. It's been an hour. I want to get into some super chats. So I know you've got a family behind you. Let's get into it. We got Robert Wilde starting it off saying, "I hope this makes Betty smile and Diana Francisco smile. My pug is doing better. We're waiting on the blood work. I'll let you know more when I can." Right on, Robert. That's great to hear. Joshua became a member. Thank you very much. Ding, 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 ding. Because of that, you can now actually spam the actual UFO emote in chat. Let's see those, all those members out there. I just spammed a little bit myself. Jason Dixon says, "Adam, I emailed you in reference to a potential great guest. He is a creator of a new coin / token." Oh, cool. Another cryptocurrency, huh? Wow. All right.
I'll check it out. No, he's probably a great guy. Probably great.
Oh, snaps. Bryson Gray with a $50 super chat. Just simply going gang, gang. Let's go. Oh, snaps. Bryson, how you doing, mate? I got to get you back on the show. That's awesome. Thank you for that support, mate. Wow. All right. If you guys don't know, man, Bryson.
I feel like we got to do something a little special for you in the back room after tipping like that, man.
Dude, that guy, dude, nothing but support from Bryson Gray. Seriously, especially once I went solo, Bryson has been supporting me from the get-go. It's really amazing. He actually drove, I think, 5 hours to join me in studio in Maryland before I left the area, and that was really awesome. So if you guys don't know who Bryson Gray is, you should definitely check him out. He is a fantastic musician and is killing it on his own, making moves, and it's
independent.
Dude is awesome. Thank you, Bryson. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate your support, mate. Joshua says, been feeling incredibly blackpilled lately, but your show takes the edge off. I only subscribe to you and Nick Rakita, our favorite big nose lawyer. I love Nick, man. He is hilarious. He's self-deprecating in the best way. You know, he everything slides right off him. You can say whatever you want to him, and he's like, you know, it's your freedom to say whatever you want. I don't care. And we need more of that energy, because people are so triggered by anything and everything. Mm-hmm. And it's so, let's legitimize and bring back not giving up about what people think, right? Goodness.
Mm-hmm. They got too much Kool-Aid in their cup, too much sugar in the tanks, man. It's about piss and vinegar some days, man. You got to be a little hard-nosed.
Yep. You'd like Nick. He's great. Mao De Mighty says, emphasize, but hold standards high. Emotions can lie. Ah, I like that. Hold the standards high. We got to, of course.
Right.
Mark G says, LBJ incentivized absent fathers with the Great Society Plan. Don't need to worry about taking care of children when they could live on welfare. Oh, man, the welfare system.
Everybody forgot about Lyndon Baines, man. That's, virulent bigot, too. Hated the guy.
Yep. The American's Creed. Have you ever heard of this?
Mm-mm.
I'm going to read it to you right now. I'm going to bring this up. Hold on. The American's Creed. This was written recently. I just found this randomly. All right. So the American's Creed. Let me pop this up. Well, am I not sharing it? There we go. I do not choose to be a common man. It is my right to be uncommon. I seek opportunity to develop whatever talents God gave me, not security. I do not wish to be a kept citizen, humbled and dulled by having the state look after me. I want to take the calculated risk to dream and to build, to fail and to succeed. I refuse to barter incentive for a dull. I prefer the challenges of life. Uh-oh.
Keep going. She's saying bars.
I like it. I prefer the challenges of life to the guaranteed existence, the thrill of fulfillment to the stale calm of utopia. I will not trade freedom for the beneficence, nor my dignity for a handout. I will never cower before any earthly master, nor bend to any threat. It is my heritage to stand erect, proud, and unafraid, to think and act myself, enjoy the benefits of my creations, and to face the world boldly and say, this with God's help I have done. And that is the American's Creed. Whenever I hear welfare, it makes me think of this, because I want to earn my keep. I work hard. I read a lot of stuff. I go live every day talking about stuff that I'm trying to understand and give people my opinion on things. You know, I try to report news. Of course, I'm biased. Everyone's biased. You can't deny everyone's biased. It just is a simple thing, you know. So, but the welfare system has really just taken this away, and they want people addicted to the state. Not even addicted. They want your children. They want you numbers in this cogwheel that they control. You know, that's what they want.
It feeds into the hubris that simply by existing, you should have somebody sustain you without any effort on your part. And it's a gateway drug. Again, once you get a little welfare, you need a little bit more. You know, you get a couple of food stamps on that card. Next thing you know, you're like, okay, well, these food stamps are nice, but this bill is a little high. Can I get a little bit of assistance with that? Then next thing you know, it goes to subsidies, payments. And before you know it, you can't do anything on your own without the state. So you're exactly right. That's amazing.
It's called The American's Creed, and I just my entire computer just went black, so I can't actually see anything right now. We're still here. All right, that's great. So I can't actually read any super chats, unfortunately. For a second, I'm trying to get back. I don't understand why this happened. Give me 1 second. I just want to see if I can.
Let's see. Well, we're here, guys, again, since I am now hosting the Flex Show. No, don't worry. I'm not taking over for Adam. I'm not taking over. But, you know, while I'm here, I just want to take an opportunity to thank you guys again for having me on. You know, can't say that enough. Also, I've got a publication, a Substack. I've got plenty of things that I'm doing to take my message on a larger scale. So, again, if you guys are interested, visit www.flexyoursuccess.com. Once again, that's www.flexyoursuccess.com. There you can find links to all my social media. You can find links to the Redacted Club, which is basically a off-center secret organization where we share the dankest of content that would surely get us thrown in the internet Gestapo. So, you know, join all of that stuff, okay? But before, you know, again, before Adam comes back in, you know, I kind of lose his platform. I really want to say everything that we're trying to do for society takes little steps. Little steps. It's not going to be accomplished in a day. Be patient. The road to winning this fight, this battle, this war, whatever you want to call it, this ideological 4D warfare, it's a tactical battle where you have to grit your teeth and you've got to go in day after day, bring your lunch pail, be very hard-nosed. So, okay, joining me now is my guest, Adam Krigler. Welcome to the Flex Show.
I figured it'd be fine. I'm not sure how long I was just talking while I was trying to figure this out. How long into that before it kicked me off. But
that was a perfect segue.
I feel like you probably could have handled it well. Let's see here.
Definitely.
Yorick says, Adam brings up Tinder. Next thing you know, I feel like we're shooting at multiple targets, Adam. Take that as you will. The ropes have been thrown. I thought it's fine. We had a good natural talk about that. Mr. Knox says, black or white, who cares? We should be judged by character. It's what makes us human. Yes. Mm-hmm. Character. Right. Exactly. Anyone could be awesome. Anyone could be a terrible person. Period. Sejong the Great. Wow. With a $50 super chat. Holy crap. Sejong, how you doing, man? Thank you so much. Holy cow. Says, crypto is rebounding. I'm making huge gains all over the place. My Hertz position from before they went bankrupt has turned into a warrant, and now it's gaining value again. Might make a huge wad off that. Hope for let's roll for 22 until none. Get them beans. All right, so this is for an actual bag of coffee. If you would like to guess, this is a 1 through 20 die. I've just officially rolled it, so good luck, everyone. You can win a bag of Krigler coffee. Why don't you take the first guess? You want to take a guess?
17.
All right. It's not 17. That's okay. All right. Well, good luck, everybody. And we'll see. Let's see. The numbers are rolling in. Oh, snaps. I just want to make sure no one else guessed this. Mark G. We've got a winner. It is Mark G. How you doing, my man, Mark G? Wow. I love seeing the regulars. It is, in fact, 12. Mark G, you won. One of my most. What's up? That was your second one. Well, it doesn't matter. You didn't win, so sucks for you. But that is awesome, Mark G. Congratulations! I think by now you will know how to actually handle what just happened, because you've seen the show enough. Email us. Are you actually in the States, Mark G? I'm not sure. If you are, and if you're not, unfortunately, we don't ship overseas, so it will be donated to 22 Until None in its entirety. Mm-hmm. So awesome. Mark G, congratulations. If you are, in fact, just email me at thekriglershow.com. I'm fairly certain you know. Sejong, thank you so much for that huge super chat and gifting out. I don't know if you know, Malcolm, I have my own coffee company. It's called Krigler Coffee. It's rather delicious. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love coffee. I'm a big fan.
Hopefully you'll be knocking Black Rifle off the spot. We got to get them out the paint.
I actually got a huge boost in business after they made that whole "I can't stand Trump supporters" speech. It's like, are you serious? Like, that's your base.
Thank you,
like, thank you for saying that. I appreciate your my newfound business. Jason Dixon says, better than just another crypto, it's a solar energy company that provides 100% green energy to Bitcoin miners. Please check it out. Thanks, bro. Oh, okay, Jason, you had my attention before, but now I'm very interested, because that's pretty cool. That's interesting.
You got a mining rig?
I could, technically I do. I have a really powerful computer with a 30 series graphics card. I got lucky and was able to snag one. So I could probably mine. I don't, because I'm rather busy with the stuff that I'm currently doing right now. So although, you know, but I'm on my computer, so I don't know if you have to leave it to do its own work or whatnot, but I don't know. Sejong the Great says, you can't have welfare without unfair. Oh, I've never heard that.
That's actually pretty good. I might have to drop that bar.
That's pretty good. I'm glad I came up with that.
Yeah. Oh, yes, you did.
Thanks for that. Yeah, you like that? I was like, I better take this before he claims it. Thank you, Sejong. I like that. That's well said. Mitch with a $20 super chat says, amazing conversation to watch after surgery. I need to try Krigler Coffee. Hate to say, but some help with medical bills would help blow through savings. Help me pay my surgery bills and insurance copay by Mitchell Devine and the GoFundMe. All right. Hey, if you guys want to help Mitch, I thank you for supporting me just now. I you know, if you don't have to send such a big super chat, but I appreciate your support, and I hope you get through it. I'm glad that you got through the surgery. Hopefully it all went well. You guys can check them out if you want to go help them out. Help me pay my surgery bills and insurance copay. That is the actual title of the GoFundMe by Mitchell Devine. All right. Good luck, Mitch. Burning Spear Patriot says, black men, let the state take care of their women. We have to take an L on that one. I don't think it's...
They kicked us out. It's complicated. It's a complicated little interplay. I think it was kind of mutual, because they were kicking black men out the house at some point, and then black men really didn't fight that hard to get back in. But again, even then, that's not even a universal situation. There were a lot of black households and a lot of black cultures that stayed intact throughout all of that.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of the product of a longstanding, you know, black household with roots in a couple of other areas. But again, even then, you're right. Welfare did a number on us, man. It really did.
I think welfare is destroying our country. Like I said, that we were talking about, I mean, pretty much a sub theme of this entire episode has been like the dumbing down of America, the dumbing down of society, and how we're weaker, right? We are becoming weaker and weaker and weaker. Like, strong times, good times, weak men, shitty times, you know, whatever that, you know, however many different ways you can say that. And that's where we're at. We're entering the weak times from the weak men. Like, we are weak, and we're seeing what happens from this, and it's devolved into where we are now. So
on average.
Yeah. Chuck Morris says, I want to be judged by the content of my character and the size of my biceps. There you go. All right. Well, you got to do work, I guess, for that. Right. So
put in the work, man.
Put in the work. I gotta do some work. I'm scrawny over here.
You're doing good.
But anyway, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I'm gonna give you the camera. I know you already kind of had the camera when it was the Flex show. But I'm gonna give you the camera again. Tell people what you're doing, how to follow you, you know, what to look forward to, and all that good stuff. And don't forget to tell everyone to smash that like button.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Look, trust me. First things first, smash the like button, guys. Again, help support this show. Adam's great. He's been growing. He's been putting in the work. See my little baby bottle over there. So yeah, I do a lot of this work to put milk in my baby's bottle. So that being said, if you guys would like to help support me, go to www.flexyoursuccess.com. Once again, that's www.flexyoursuccess.com. Sign up for the Substack, you know, go ahead and get a subscription. I'm running a welcome back special. I like to do podcasts for people where the articles that I read, those are all free. But, you know, if you want the added luxury of being able to just listen on the go or just get some new insights to maybe what I'm writing that I can't express the best on, you know, just a couple of keys with limited characters, check out a premium subscription, support my work, and also join the Redacted Club, guys, because we're building a decentralized network. Nobody's cancel proof. So with that being said, we're going to have a way for us to share whatever we're doing. We've got a growing list of, I guess you can say, influencers, you know, guys like Mark Lobliner, Jake Coco, Ron Coleman, even Adam's in it. And we just share some of our content there. Yes, there the man is, man of the hour. But yeah, we share our content, and you know, it's awesome because if one of us ever goes missing, or you know, you don't know where to find us, we'll always be there. So that's the Redacted Club. So you can find all that on my site. And again, follow me on, let's see, God, which one is it? It's going to be Flex. I know I've got so many. I've got
Return of the Flex. Return of the Flex. All right. In fact, because of what happened earlier, someone actually said I missed a couple super chats, and I did find them. Actually, I went back. The Farm Engineer with the $10 super chat says, "Hey Malcolm, what do you recommend for real-time data visualization on Linux? Also, my rich black friend from Maryland works at Mother Jones. Full woke. My cousin, who happens to be black, not so much." Okay. Do you even work with Linux? I don't know much about it.
We actually don't. Within the hospital infrastructure, they've got us solidly grandfathered into the Microsoft system. So
okay.
I don't even think we have a Linux backend on any of our systems.
Okay.
Sorry, I can't help you there.
That's all right. That's all right.
Software is compatible.
Mark G says, "Playboy, it's a trap." Yeah, that's an understatement. Mr. It's not even a trap. It's like,
yeah, no.
It's like the front of a trap is like you maybe look like a girl, and then springs a dick in your face. You know, it's like that's a trap. Like, this was like blatantly a man on the cover.
I was about to say, there's no way. That's not a fault.
Who's going to fall for that? It's kind of obvious. Anyway, let's see. Mr. Knox says, "Hugh Hefner would be rolling in his grave if he saw that cover. Guess Playboy pushed their audience to other nudie mags like Penthouse." Yeah, there you go. The Last Crow changed the name from Playboy to Femboy. I could say some things. But Vash says, "Adam, I just read the articles. I swear, CPT Playoni." I don't know what that means. Okay. Mark G says, "This is Playboy. They modeled an underage girl before. Did they really? That doesn't surprise me." And that's really sad. Serious Business says, "What did you think of the new Chappelle special?" I haven't seen it, actually. I didn't know there was a new Chappelle special. But I love Chappelle. He's a legend. Dude is a legend. I'm going to definitely check them out. Zacchaeus and Brannigan says, "Q has created weak voters with no ground game." Interesting. Okay. Go ahead.
I was actually about the positive that. Yeah, it's true. It's that whole messianic type culture, unfortunately, where, you know, you're just waiting on somebody. You want to think that there's a plan instead of making a plan yourself.
Right. Exactly. It keeps people complacent and not getting in and, you know, doing the actual work themselves. Oh, someone else is doing it? I don't have to do anything? Oh, yeah, great. I'm going to sit comfortable on my couch, like you said. Like,
patriots are in control.
Yeah.
Pelosi the white hat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trust Sessions. He will be activated.
Oh, my goodness. The Durham report will come. Oh, my goodness. Although it finally did come, and it's pretty, pretty damning for the Clintons. But anyway, yeah, Jedi Knight, Anakin Cringewalker, what's good, mate, says, "Something you all have to research is if social media used algorithms to predict who you likely were to vote for and only remind Dems to vote." probably, actually. That's a good point. Probably. All right, now I caught up to my other super chats. Let me just make sure we didn't catch any more. Just a reminder, everyone, I will not have a show tomorrow. Tomorrow I am not going live because I am heading to Texas tomorrow morning. I'm going to be doing the both the podcast. I'm drawing a blank now. You Are Here. That's the name of their new show. You Are Here. It's taking place right now. They're live. So tomorrow I'm going to be joining them. And unfortunately, I won't be doing my show tomorrow. I'm also going to be on Elijah's earlier show. Oh, kids, they're fantastic. Malcolm, it's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you ever for joining. And we will see you all next time here on The Krigler Show, which is going to be Friday, because I am not going to be going live tomorrow. I'm going to have a post. In fact, maybe I'll actually go live from the studio and kind of take over. But until then, I'll see you guys next time. Thank you all for joining. I'll see you next time.
Please smash the like button for The Krigler Show, coming to you live Monday through Friday, 6:30 Eastern Time.